This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
GM's global sales last year were more global.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Now to the global perspective, what's happening in business and economics at the intersection of the U.S. and the rest of the world. General Motors reported this week it fell several thousand cars short of Toyota in the number of cars sold around the world. But here's an interesting fact. For the first time in the automaker's 102-year history, GM sold more cars in a foreign market than in the United States. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports.
That foreign market happens to be China, the fastest-growing automobile market on the planet. GM sold 200,000 more vehicles in China than it sold at home. Sounds like good news, but there's a caveat.
The average price of the car that GM sells in China is about half of the price of a car it sells in the United States.
Michael Dunn is finishing a book about GM's success in China. He points out that not only are GM's cars cheaper in China, but the company also has to share its profits.
GM is a minority shareholder in China. So for every car it gets sold, it collects half of the revenues.
So for GM's bean counters, the numbers from China don't look that impressive. GM's growth sure does, though. 12 years ago, the company sold just 20,000 Buicks in China. This year, they sold 2.4 million vehicles. Last week's visit from President Hu Jintao saw a $900 million deal to export Cadillacs, Buicks, and Chevys, all signs that GM's growth isn't likely to slow down anytime soon. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
So a coworker of mine brought a giant chocolate bar into work today. It was a pretty pricey piece of candy, but what's happening in the Ivory Coast could make that chocolate bar even more expensive. Ivory Coast is the world's biggest producer of cocoa, the key ingredient for chocolate. And a two-month-old election stalemate has one presidential contender calling for a month-long ban on the overseas sale of cocoa. The BBC's John James is with us now from Abidjan, which is the Ivory Coast's commercial capital. Hi, John.
Hi, Steve.
A cocoa ban from one of the biggest cocoa sellers. I mean, is this going to raise the price of my chocolate here in the United States?
Well, there's probably a good chance that it might, actually. I mean, generally, cocoa prices have been high for the last 2 years, and this announcement has raised the price of cocoa on the markets by about 5%. So we're already at year-long highs. Certainly, cocoa is getting more expensive, and that, of course, is a key ingredient in chocolate.
Why is cocoa being used as a political weapon, and how effective is that ban going to be?
Well, we'll have to see the impact. I mean, cocoa is the major export here in Ivory Coast. This produces around a third of world supply. It's a key means, really, for Laurent Gbagbo to carry on in power. He's the president who, according to most of the world, lost the elections in November, but he's still determined to carry on. And getting money from cocoa sales is probably one of the key ways that he can carry on paying salaries and being in government. So it's seen as a way to sort of strangulate his financial control and just make it more difficult for him to carry on and possibly force him to accept the democratically elected leader, Alassane Ouattara, in the eyes of most of the world.
All right, the BBC's John James in Abidjan. John, thank you.
Thank you.
Let's do the numbers. Global shares are mixed at the moment. We told you McDonald's made a little money in its latest quarter. Now it's planning on raising some of its menu prices to keep up with inflation. Texas Instruments reported its fourth quarter narrowly beat analyst expectations. Wall Street yesterday, the S&P added 0.5%, the NASDAQ a full percent. The Dow was up 108 points, just 20 points shy of 12,000.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. And by CSX, working to reduce traffic and pollution while moving 1 million tons of freight daily. CSX, how tomorrow moves.
People who invent things in this country look to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office to protect their ideas. But right now, there's a big backlog. More than 700,000 applications are waiting to be processed. As part of an effort to clear the logjam, the agency will open its first office outside of Washington, in Detroit. Michigan Radio's Sarah Hewlett reports.
David Kapos is the director of the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and his assessment of how long it takes to grant a patent is pretty blunt.
In a word, it's too long.
Kapos says on average, it takes about 2 years just to get someone to read your application, then another year after that to hear whether you've been granted a patent.
You know, it's really a major economic drain valued at billions of dollars a year when the government is sitting on patent applications that are all about job creation and opportunity creation for our country.
Sean Quinn understands the long wait for a patent all too well. Quinn is an engineer at General Motors. He is taking me through a door inside a cavernous testing facility at the company's proving ground west of Detroit.
As you can tell, this room is quite quiet. Some of the testing that I personally worked on in here is modal testing on the next generation full-size pickup trucks. This is the room where, you know, we work on keeping our cars quiet and keeping them vibration-free.
That's Quinn's specialty, and he submitted 18 patent applications related to that and other work over the past several years. He's been awarded 4, but the rest hang in limbo, including one for a concept that was shown to suppliers to help GM figure out how to put it into production. That patent application was submitted in 2004.
Two suppliers to date have looked at the execution, developed their production solution, gone ahead and patented and received a U.S. filing on that, and we're the originators of the idea, and we still do not have our own patent here.
The Detroit office will open this summer and hire 100 patent examiners. Officials say they chose Detroit in part because the auto industry submits so many patent applications. In Detroit, I'm Sarah Hewlett for Marketplace.
And finally, in case you don't already know this, people are watching you on your Facebook or MySpace page. That includes friends and foes alike, including the bank checking out photos of your shopping spree, thieves who know when you're out of town, and insurance companies making sure you're really deserving of that disability check. The LA Times reported on a recent study by insurance consultant Salent. It suggests stuff on social networking sites could even be used to set policy prices. Does your latest photo show you with a not-so-broken arm? Ouch. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles, tweeting at Radio Chio. This is the Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
Food scientists are tinkering in the kitchen in ways, honestly, that are kind of hard to conceptualize.
Just like an inkjet printer you have at home, instead of putting down droplets of ink, I'm putting down droplets of food.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, the Freakonomics of Food and the Numbers from Wall Street, next time on Marketplace from American Public Media.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.